Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Bruce Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rumble, fan.video, vigilante.tv, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We could not do it without you for the past 5 years. If you haven't rated the show yet, well, shit, you've had 5 years to do it. I certainly hope you would give us 5 stars if you think we've earned it over here. We're working our asses off. If you want to connect with me, the website, macroaggressions.io, is the best place to do that. Get your news at activistpost.com. Get some good gear over there, too. I got a good, for those watching, I've got a good White Rabbit sweatshirt on. There's a lot of good, a lot of great sweatshirts and t-shirts and things like that at activistpost.com. You'll find a little button that says gear. Just go over there and check it out. Big thank you to our sponsors. Thank God. We've got good ones, man. I'm so excited that I found Van Man. You got to go check it out. Go to their website and just check it out. Vanman.shop. Okay. Not .com, .shop. And take a look at what they're doing over there. All natural products, soaps, lotions, tooth powder. Game changer, man. Tooth powder. I'm telling you right now. It'll change your world. Vanilla body butter, but like it's not just vanilla body butter. It's only got a couple of ingredients. Grass-fed beef tallow, shea butter, olive oil, honey, vanilla oil. Like very limited, okay? They're not adding a bunch of chemicals and all that nonsense. They could, but they're not going to. That's not their thing. Tallow and coconut soap. It's cool. Pink bar, smells good. Stamped a little van on it. They've got great packaging, you know? I mean, they've got great products. I know because I've got a stack of them and I've been incorporating them into my daily routine. But they also have great packaging and it looks good too at the same time. You know, I mean, listen, the marketing degree in me comes out sometimes when I see their stuff and I go, shit, I mean, it looks good on top of being high quality. So if you're in the market or you're just curious, go to vanman.shop, take a look and see what they've got, man. They're a small business out of San Diego. They have, go follow their X account. You'll see they have no love for the government either. You know, we have found the company. If you're looking for, you know, something, lotion, soaps, stuff like that, this is probably going to be the place for you. Go to vanman.shop, use the discount code MACRO on your way out the door. Also, our friends at My Patriot Supply are back. We're so glad to have them. If you don't have storable food yet, you probably should. It's one of those things where you'll feel a little bit better about things if you know you've got, I don't know, 3 months of food, you know, just in case. And it lasts for 25 years. So you're really covered for the next quarter century on this. I mean, you're going to have this food for a long, long time. Hopefully you don't need it, but you'll know that you've got it. And if you're stocked up already, maybe there's somebody in your life who isn't, who maybe is a normie, or maybe, you know, maybe your parents are older and, you know, you say, I just want to make sure that they're good. You can buy it, have it sent to them. Just tell them, hey, you're going to get a couple buckets in the mail. They'll deliver it right to your house. Just grab them, put them in your basement somewhere and just, you know, forget about it and just know that you've got it. So if you're interested, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. And take a look and see what they've got. They've got sales going on all the time. They have a tremendous supply of things over there. So you'll find whatever you, if you need camping gear or, you know, obviously storable food, equipment, it's over there. So, the link is down in the show notes. If you're driving around, you can't really write it down. It's preparewithmacroaggressions.com. That's the place to go. All right. Well, I've been working on eugenics, on writing about eugenics for a while. Nothing that you guys will have seen, but it's been a topic that I wish I could forget about. I wish I could dismiss. You know, it is the ideology of the globalists. I always feel like Alex Jones when I'm saying that, but it is when you write a book like My Octopus of Global Control, which came out in 2017, you write about control structures and this push towards world government or / world governance, you understand that though they intend to create this sort of one world government, the underlying theme that doesn't get talked about a lot because it's really bad for PR is that this whole governance thing would be way easier if it wasn't for all these fucking people. You know, it just would. It just would be a lot easier if I didn't have to worry about what the plebs thought of this or that. And so depopulation is just a tiny bit under the surface. And as soon as you scratch world government, you'll see it. It's there. It's always there. Because it's a calculation that they make. You know, let's just say there's 8 billion people. I have questions about that. But let's just say there's 8 billion people. Would you want to control 8 billion people or 1 billion people? You know, it's just easier to do it when there's less people. Now, you could find some sort of control structure that scales up and, you know, maybe a billion, 8 billion, it doesn't matter, right? If you're running it through AI. And we'll get into that in this episode a little bit. But I want to talk about some of the groups that are behind it because they are starting to get a brand name recognition. You know, it's not limited to us lunatics talking about this stuff. Now you're starting, you know, in the same way that USAID was something that I've been doing episodes on for 3 years, but now the general public is starting to talk about it. Well, that's kind of the same with some of these depopulation outfits out there that we've talked about them for years, but now the normies are starting to go, well, wait a second. I have questions about, wait, what is the... Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, are they good? Are they bad? Are they, you know, what are they doing? I hear that they got, you know, that they've had some problems in India, you know, it's like, okay, great. Now we're having the conversation. So yeah, welcome to the party. You know, I'm glad you're here. Glad you're thinking about this. It's a dark topic, no doubt about it. I mean, when you're talking about depopulation, you have to be a little bit clinical about it, because if you get into the realities of it, it's horrible. But we can't be scared away just because it's horrible. So it's important to talk about. We'll talk about it. We'll get into a little bit of the role of artificial intelligence moving forward. It's going to play a big part in this. I want to talk about the groups that are involved. I want to talk to you about a lady, the queen of depopulation, who you may or may not have heard of. We'll you know, I love statistics. We'll wrap up with some ominous, unfortunately, statistics about where things are headed and what this might look like. But the restructuring of society is well underway. Unfortunately for us, the totalitarian tiptoe is happening right before our eyes. It is walking us into a digital prison. And for those with the eyes to see it, you can maneuver yourself out of that. But you've got to get honest about the situation that we're in. And so we'll explore it as we do. We're not afraid of tough situations. Tough topics. It's kind of our specialty here, but we'll do it in a way that's kind of snarky and, you know, informative and annoying. You know, like, you're just going to be annoyed at the whole thing. It's like, God damn, like, it requires a ton of effort and planning and money and all of that to create this depopulation industry. And you just think, like, what if, I know I'm crazy here, but what if all of that effort went towards making the world better? What if it went towards not murdering all the people on the planet, but instead making sure that they're healthy, making sure that they're more productive? I mean, these people run industries, they run businesses, they run, you should want your customers, your employees, your whatever, you should want them to be healthy, live longer, buy your products, use your services, do all of that. But unfortunately, that's me inserting my nice guy brain into a scenario that is run by psychopaths. And they don't come at these problems the same way that we do. They see human beings as useless eaters. They talk about them, call them that. They have no respect for humanity. Now, look, I've been to Walmart. You know, you can do a lap through Walmart and come out on the other and starts thinking, you know, that depopulation plan is sound pretty good right about now. You know what I mean? There's a lot of dumb people. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't doing much. And it's a slippery slope, you know, from joking about how, like, you wish that, you know, you could thin out the lines at Disneyland a little bit more so that you didn't have to wait 45 minutes for Space Mountain. It's a slippery slope, right? And you want to catch yourself before you go down that path. Because everybody's here, everybody's got a purpose, they're doing something. It might not be productive, might not be productive in the way in which we see it, but, you know, somebody loves them and they've got a family, and it's important for us not to fall into this darkness that these people live in. And so, you know, part of the way that we make sure that we don't find ourselves sliding down that slope into, well, you know, a little depopulation wouldn't be the worst thing, is that we get honest about who these people are. We talk about it right now. We have the conversation. We think about it so that the next time you're plotting in your mind how, you know, this whole, you know, this fucking freeway would move a lot faster if it wasn't for this asshole. You know, look at all these people that are, you know, they're not using their turn signals and they're cutting, you know, like, God, if they just didn't exist anymore, you know, things would work a lot better. We got to make sure we don't go down that path, though tempting at times. So, part of the process of depopulation is kind of laid out. Leo Holman did a good job, but he talks about the four Ds: digitization, dehumanization, destruction, and depopulation. The digitization of money and, unfortunately, of human beings as well. We're definitely sliding down that that slope. And we'll get into that. That's transhumanism. Dehumanization, with people being replaced by hybrids. Again, we're getting into sort of a transhuman scenario here. Destruction of all cultural norms, genders, ability to reproduce without technology. And now we're starting to get into Brave New World, hatching operations, state hatcheries, and the Paul Ehrlichs of the world talking about how we should put sterilants in the public drinking water and then have a lottery to see who gets their number called, and we'll give you an antidote which reverses the sterilization. I mean, crazy shit like that, by the way, has been discussed for the past half century. Not just after you've had a couple too many cocktails. I mean, written in books and published. Like the Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich. Go read that. I mean, it's the rantings of a lunatic. And yet the Club of Rome will hold this guy up as like a scientific genius. And depopulation. Depopulation, the last one, of useless eaters, as Henry Kissinger calls everybody. So, and it leads to, in my, you know, if I could tack on something to Leo Holman's outstanding work, I would add the fifth D, dystopia. You know, the end of the human race. So let's talk about restructuring society with artificial intelligence. It's definitely a direction that we're headed. We've been prepped for this through predictive programming and movies. We've seen this coming, Minority Report, but really anything Philip K. Dick related, any of the movies that are tied to them, you know, tied to his work, will get you thinking about technology in a whole new way. With artificial intelligence, they talk about revolutionizing entire industries using it. Not just that it's great at spell checking or whatever, or it can help you research something, or it can give you an amazing recipe for lasagna, or not just that. I mean, you get all that, but they're talking about the elimination of fossil fuels by the use of artificial intelligence. They're talking about governments being run with AI. God help us. I mean, you thought politicians were bad. Wait till you can't throw tomato. You can't throw a shoe at George H. or George W. Bush. Right now, it's a robot. Now, what are you going to do? They're talking about restructuring society through 15-minute cities and what that would look like. Well, that's artificial intelligence playing a huge role in that. You know, it's not so much that they build a wall in a 15-minute radius from your house. It's just that the technology, maybe it's geofenced and it doesn't work outside of 15 minutes or 15 miles or whatever the parameters are set. You know, maybe your digital currency is set that you can't use it in the neighboring state. It just doesn't work. I mean, it knows where your home is. It's set to only work within a certain area, and then anything outside of, I know it sounds crazy when you're talking about it in 2025, but extrapolate out where we're going. Think about that. Don't think like you and me. Think like them. Think like a psychopath. Well, if I could control humanity, what would I do? Well, would you make their money? I'd control their money. Okay, good. How would we control it? Well, you could make it evaporate out of their bank account. Oh, that'd be really diabolical. Yeah, well, you can do it with a central bank digital currency or a stable coin, anything programmable, any protocol of the crypto that allows you to monkey with it, as opposed to something like Bitcoin, which is set, the parameters are set. You don't get to go in there and fuck with it. But something like, I don't know, Ripple or a stable coin, let's just say it's a Wells Fargo or Bank of America stable coin. So you got your money at Bank of America, and now you've got Bank of America coins that you're dealing with. You don't think they're going to deduct your account fees out of that, of course, it'd be easier for them to do it. They could set parameters on your money so that it won't work. You know, all that we've talked about this in the past, using artificial intelligence to just not just eliminate jobs. We're already seeing that. I'm talking about eliminating entire industries. If you're somebody that crunches numbers for a living, if you're a finance guy, you come out of Wharton, got an MBA, ready to go to work in Wall Street, guess what? You're the guy that they can drop a 100-page financial document from some, you know, corporation you need to research. You're the guy who's really good at finding the one number in there that'll make all the difference in whether or not your bank should invest in this company or maybe or not or whatever it is. Yeah. Well, AI is going to do that way better than you. A whole lot faster and cheaper. So there's going to be industries that go away. And as a result of that, there are going to be a lot of people that no longer have a purpose, no longer have a job, no longer have revenue. And so to combat that, now you start to get into the universal basic income component of this. And that takes you into takes you into Sam Altman territory, which is a combination of WorldCoin and OpenAI, which he said he's running both of those. OpenAI is, hey, we got all this great AI and we're reimagining society and we're destroying industries. And then you've got WorldCoin, which he says would be great to be used for universal basic income, you know, for a freebie. You know, scan your eyeballs, of course. That was the criteria to get it back when they launched it in, I don't know where it was, Singapore or someplace. You'd scan your eyeball and then he'd give you $50 worth of this shit coin. So, you know, you can use AI right now to, you know, help you with some tasks, improve things a little bit, maybe do it faster than you could do it. That's okay. That's fine. Whatever. But we can see where this is going. And of course, they get a lot of people hooked early on. You know, try before you buy. Hey, man, you know, how do you sell crack? Give it away at first. Get people hooked on it. Well, how do you sell AI? Give it away at first. Get people hooked. Next thing you know, you're so dependent on it. It's got all your passwords. It's got all your login stuff. You know, it's like, oh, it's just so much easier if I use it to do this, this, and this. And then all of a sudden the free version goes away and now you're paying for it. And now all that information maybe is being weaponized against you. It's certainly going somewhere. You start to get into the Internet of Things. That's been around for a while. Now we're into the Internet of Bodies, which is extremely dangerous. Talk about mRNA vaccines and luciferase and all that stuff, right? You're talking about the Internet of Bodies. I don't want the first version of an operating system in my body. I don't want the fourth version of it in my body either, but I certainly don't want the practice version, you know, it being injected into me in a like it was in 2021 by Moderna with their gene therapies, their experimental rush to market, not vaccines, but actual gene therapies. I always found it interesting. People have said, you've got a Moderna vaccine, do you? Oh yeah. Are you're comfortable with Moderna? You feel good about their track record? Oh, really? They brought eight product. They've tried on eight different occasions to bring products to market. They've failed on all eight of them. This is the ninth one, the vaccine. And the only reason why they got it to market was the emergency use authorization. Do you still feel good about Moderna? Well, you know, their stock price is really good. Yeah, well, enjoy that. Talking about using AI to completely restructure healthcare. It's coming. You know, it's coming. And with that, internet ID cards, you know, we're going to have that at some point here, crypto economy. So all of this, when you go, well, this isn't depopulation. This isn't eugenics. No, it's not on the surface, but you see how all of this feeds in. They couldn't dream of something like artificial intelligence when you've got, the Huxleys dreaming of depopulation or Galton or, or Darwin, or, you know, all of these guys that were, you know, came up 100 years ago, the concept that they would have this level of technology at their disposal was unthinkable. But unfortunately, right now, you've got the Ray Kurzweils of the world and the Noah Hararis and all of these, you know, Sam Altmans and all these people saying, you know, soul, your soul, you don't have a soul. You don't need free will. Free will doesn't exist. You don't need that. Right. But now they have the technological capacity to actually make that a reality. So it's a dangerous time. And now what we're seeing also is, you know, with AI, it's going to be used to create culture on top of that. It's going to be hard to figure out what trends came organically, you know, or whether AI has created the next ice bucket challenge that every jackass is filming themselves doing. You know, I'll tell you one thing, and this I know for certain, at some point, if not already, the artificial intelligence will be weaponized against the people. You can take that to the bank. Not the traditional banks, because they'll be out of business. But you can take it to the proverbial bank. Let's talk about transhumanism. Sir Julian Huxley invented this term back in the 1960s. He was the head of the British Eugenics Society. They were having a PR crisis because eugenics is awful and people were starting to figure it out. So they rebranded it into a new term that was going to take them into the new millennium. You know, like they did this in the late 60s and they're, well, you know, listen, let's do something that sounds kind of futuristic and definitely doesn't remind people of murder. We'll call it transhumanism, you know, and what we will aspire to have at some point is basically like a worker class of, you know, human robots. That's kind of their fantasy for us. I mean, they'd prefer that we're all dead. In the absence of that, they'll take it so that you're so neutered mentally that you are a walking, talking NPC. You're a human robot. And I'll tell you what, after the people that have taken four rounds of COVID shots, some of them are walking robots. They have been detached. It's hard to measure. It's very difficult to quantify what it is about them, but they are one deviation less themselves. It's just something has happened. And I can't put my finger on it exactly, but I know it when I see it. And people are suffering. So we can call transhumanism, instead of eugenics, let's call it nugenics, because that's what it is. It's just the new form of eugenics. It's transhumanism. It's eugenics 2.0 with a much better marketing campaign, because it sounds amazing if you've lost a limb in an accident. That somehow, you know, I mean, they can put it back on. You know, you're the $6 million man for those old like me that remember that show. Shit, were they selling transhumanism back then? They probably. I'm going to have to dig in to see who the writers were of a $6 million man. Swear to God, if it's Paul Ehrlich, I'm going to fucking have problems here. And, you know, and Julian Huxley, who everyone knows Aldous. His brother, Brave New World, and what he was writing about was a scientific caste system. You know, they have a caste system in India. You're born into it. You know, you're sort of slotted in terms of where you're going to be societally. And they envision, you know, these guys love like classifying nature, and they're, you know, you think of Darwin and he's, you know, of the origins of species, and he's talking about, well, this species goes there and this one goes here and this, and you know, they break all that down. They have in their minds a scientific caste system that they would love for humanity to be slotted in, with them at the top, of course. I mean, they're the dominant species as they think. But this is the direction that we're going with transhumanism, and I I have mentioned this before. I'll say it again. I think it's worth thinking about because at some point there's going to be a threshold where you're no longer technically human. You know, when you've injected mRNA technology into your body, or you've taken a Neuralink, or whatever the future programs may be, you've added it to yourself. You've become more than a human. You become different. And at some point, they're going to make a calculation that you've actually become so far removed from being a human that you're actually legally no longer a human. You know, a human being is a natural person and has this and that and has these characteristics. But you, my friend, you have a chip in your brain. You have had 17 different mRNA vaccines injected into you. You know, legally, you're really not a human being anymore. So you're in a new class of person. You're transhuman. You're beyond human. You are other. So what are the legal ramifications of that? Because the laws don't apply to your dog. You know what I mean? Because your dog is not a human. So once you become no longer legally a human, what happens to you? Do you have any rights? You don't have human rights because you're not a human. Are you a slave? Are you a genetically modified person in the same way that Monsanto can't patent an organic tomato seed because it comes from nature, but if they made it one deviation less organic and changed the seeds just a little bit, now technically it's not organic. It's not natural. It's something else. It is genetically modified. And therefore, we can own it. We can patent it. We can sue you if the wind blows the seeds into your tomato field, your organic tomato field from the GMO tomato field down the street. We can sue you because you're taking our intellectual property and using it in your garden. The farmers are like, I didn't want it. It blew in here. The wind blew it in here. Doesn't matter. There's legal precedent that you will lose that case. Because Monsanto is sued and they have won. So this is already going on. Just think about that. Think about the magical tomato plant and how at some point they figured out a way that they could own it. And at some point, they'll figure out a way to own you because they're interested in servitude. They're interested in getting everybody on a caste system that is beneath them. So it's like an genetically modified operating system that is overlaid on top of your natural default operating system. That's what transhumanism is. Mind control. They can no rights, new slaves. Who ran the previous slave trade? Who owned the boats? Oh, yeah. We won't get into that. Let's talk about Barbara Marx Hubbard. Have you heard of her? She's the queen of depopulation. She's awful. She is awful. She's like a lot of these people, a depopulationist disguised as a hippie, you know? And one of the things that she wanted to do was engineer a new species of humans called Homo Universalis. It's New Age horseshit is what it is. But this goes along with my genetically modified people concept because, look, I'm not the first person to come up with this idea. Clearly, they've been talking about this for a long, long time. They're talking about a post-humanism, or she, Barbara Marx Hubbard, and she looks like a sweet old lady, you know, you would never in a million years think like, oh, like, you know, get her at a dinner party, get her to start talking about how, you know, this world would work better if we could get rid of all these people. She's talking about a post-humanism religion and a a techno-fascist economy. Technology-driven, fascist in the sense that controlled by the people at the top. And her class, her group of people at the top. And if you ever hear, you've heard the concept new normal. Well, the new normal, air quotes, concept was coined by Barbara Marx Hubbard. That's hers. She's the one that came up with it. So talk about psychologically traumatizing people. Like, no, I know you used to go outside and interact with human beings, but this is COVID. And so now we have a new normal. And the new normal is that nobody goes to school and nobody goes to their job and everybody stays home and Netflix and chill and all that stuff. And that's the new normal. That's Barbara Marx Hubbard. She's the one, they didn't pull that. They didn't just make up that name. That comes from her. And she's a bigwig in the eugenics movement. And she's tied to, I mentioned Ray Kurzweil, Google lunatic, Singularity University, started that in 2008 with Larry Page from Google. So she's tied with him. She's in with him. And these are people that are talking about, well, listen, humanity needs to evolve. And we're going to be the ones that are going to give it the push to make that evolution. And of course, you'll find her at the World Economic Forum meetings. You know, you will, she was financed by Rockefeller Brothers Fund, Lawrence Rockefeller, you know, the UFO guy who finances all those, Stephen Greer and Hillary Clinton and all those. Taking money from Lawrence Rockefeller is a bad idea. I shouldn't have to say that. But if you do, like Stephen Greer has, anything you say can be held against you for the rest of your life. Because it's financed by people that are plotting ways to thin the herd. So maybe Stephen Greer doesn't know it. I don't know. Maybe he does. But when you take money from these guys, there's an agenda at stake here. She started something called the Foundation for Conscious Evolution. And you go, oh, that sounds like I should be smoking a lot of pot to wrap my head around. Oh, Foundation for Conscious Evolution. Are we just going to go meditate on the beach and raise our frequency and vibrate at a higher level and be whisked away? Well, I mean, no, that's what the name sounds like. Once you peel it back just a little bit, what you'll find is transhumanism and depopulation, of course. Also, when you look at sustainable development goals, the SDGs, the United Nations 17 SDGs, they were being pushed before the World Economic Forum was talking about them. They were being pushed by New Age futurists, just like Barbara Marx Hubbard. And they would describe this. How would I describe this? I would describe her as a neo-Malthusian, like the new version of Thomas Malthus, and you know, just a dangerous ideology. They're talking about transhumanism, and she wants a. She's on the record talking about a new world order, you know, and that this would be run by technocrats. It would be run by the World Economic Forum. It would be run by Google. Be run by, and of course, Ray Kurzweil is her partner in a lot of things. So they have this idea that it's going to be that they know what's best for humanity. Commies always think that, you know, this is just technocratic. Commies, you know what I mean? They'll do all the planning. Well, how much food do we need to feed 300 million people? Well, we'll figure it out. We'll have one person who's in charge of all the central planning, and then we'll centrally plan for all of it, and then we'll just figure it out. Well, I got news for you. You ain't getting any food. If Barbara Marx Hubbard has anything to do with it, you will be resettled in the East, as a euphemism for depopulated. Okay. And you can find that her foundation, the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, focuses on five things: artificial intelligence, biotech, nanotech, Internet of Things, Internet of Bodies. It's a common theme. You will find that running through all of this. There's certain components that they all focus on. It's this. They want to be in, they want computers inside you. They want them inside your body in the form of nanotechnology, biologics, wearables, implantables, Internet of Bodies. They want you to have full surveillance. They want you to take a pill. Take this pill. You know, take this pill, and it'll track. It'll make sure that you took all your other pills. So it's tracking and ultimately enslavement. And of course, the World Future Society. She was involved with Maurice Strong. Maurice Strong. We've done. We've done an entire episode on him. Dangerous dude. Rockefeller. Joined the Rockefellers when he was 17, back in like the, I want to say like early 50s. And he's the godfather of climate change. He invented Agenda 21. That was his baby, right? He partnered up with the Rockefellers in the United Nations very early on. And so whenever you hear about climate change or Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030, and you go back, well, who started all that? Maurice Strong started all that. With the financing of the Rockefellers, and he was a Canadian who, you know, borders don't mean anything, by the way, as you've probably noticed. It doesn't necessarily, this is not an American operation, the depopulation. It's not limited to that. There are plenty of participants from around the globe that are interested in this. Speaking of the United Nations, let's talk about that, because they're deeply involved in United Nations, in world government. You know, Rockefellers started it. Maurice Strong involved. Barbara Marx Hubbard, a focal point of it. She's been involved for a long time. And Mikhail Gorbachev, the former prime minister, premier of Russia, was. When he's not doing Louis Vuitton ads, he's plotting ways to depopulate the planet. He's been, these would be the godfathers of sustainable development. That's the term that they use. So when you start thinking like, well, what is, eugenics? It comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes, but they don't want to say eugenics anymore. So they branded it as transhumanism. Is it known as anything else? For sure. It's known as sustainable development. So whenever you hear sustainable development, it doesn't mean we're going to build a car that runs on water. It doesn't mean that we're going to find a way to not fill up the landfills with garbage, and or that we're recycling, or that we're doing it. That's the cover story. Again, right below the surface is depopulation. So whenever all the greenies out there that are talking about, we've got to save the whales, save the snails, and all that, it is. The run-of-the-mill person that's interested in sustainability, probably a good person, probably has no idea that the concept was created for a much different and extremely dark purpose. But they know. And the people that created the sustainable development, it's coming from the fucking Rockefellers, who are destroying the world by pulling out gas and all the pollution that comes with that, all the oil that comes out of the ground that they've, all the oil spills and the pharmaceutical industry. So there are no saviors of humanity. You have to ask yourself, why would they give a shit about sustainability at all? Well, the answer is they don't. In their hearts, they don't. This is a cover story for depopulation. United Nations Environmental Program coined the term sustainable development. They launched Agenda 21, later Agenda 2030 and Agenda 2050. The first executive director of the United Nations Environmental Program was Maurice Strong. It came out of the UN Conference on Human Environment. And you can go back to the 1994 UN's International Conference on Population and Development. This is right after they started all the climate summits that broke off. Partners in the United Nations Environmental Program oh, just Bilderberg, Club of Rome, and the World Economic Forum. Okay, so speaking of the Club of Rome, let's talk a little bit about them. You should read that book, The Limits to Growth. It came out in 1972 by Aurelio Pesci, and he's one of the co-founders of of the Club of Rome. That's the book where it says that it does not matter if we will use climate change, and it does not matter if it's real or invented for the purposes. It's where they give up the game about how they're going to invent the concept of global warming, later to be called climate change. But that they would use global warming as the pretext for a world government, to create world government, and that they would use, they would later use carbon taxes. They would demonize the industrial industries, which is funny because they all come out of the industrial industries with oil and gas and whatnot. But they're going to demonize that. They're going to make carbon the enemy. And then they're going to create a carbon tax that they will unveil for everyone. It'll start at the higher levels. It'll start with government first, and then it'll work its way down. Eventually, it'll be a per person carbon tax. And that in this book, The Limits to Growth by the Club of Rome, they say it will be the funding mechanism for the new world order, for the world government. So they're not going to go up and patch the ozone layer with all the money that you give them. They're not going to send a fleet of rockets up there to fix that ozone hole. No, no, no. They never mention anything that they're going to do to fix the problems that they call out. They just say that they're going to collect the money from the carbon tax and that it'll fund the world government. So be very careful of the environmentalists out there. The Club of Rome partnered with MIT. If you might have, I don't know if you guys know Dennis Meadows. Have you ever heard who Dennis Meadows is? You can find him. He's a Club of Rome guy. He should be institutionalized for his safety and the safety of everybody around him. He is off his rocker completely. But he partnered up with a guy named Jay Forrester. And Jay Forrester comes out of MIT. He did something called systems dynamics theory. Systems dynamics theory. Interesting. Where did I hear? It sounds a lot like evolutionary game theory. It sounds a lot like population structures. That, boy, if I didn't know any better, it sounds a lot like Jeffrey Epstein, Martin Nowak, and Harvard, right? Oh, wait, this guy is Jay Forrester working at MIT. What is it about the Ivy Leagues and depopulation? Probably because they were started by all these industrialists too. That's where you get educated on nonsense. As at Ivy League schools, you get told that that you're in the elite group, and that the rest of the useless eaters need to be culled. So Jay Forrester is also known. Let me finish this thought, because systems dynamic theory is what he was putting forth, and what that means is that they want you to watch resources. They watch resource consumption. They want you to graph population growth, and then they put out environmental pollution forecasts. Now, with all of this stuff, the numbers are totally skewed. When you control the numbers, you can make them dance however you want them to. And with systems dynamics theory, they plug it in the computer, and then they can make the computer show however, whatever they want. Oh, listen, we're all going to be, there's going to be no ice in the North Pole by 2030, right? 1990, all the ice in the Arctic Circle will be melted. Well, wait a minute, 1997. All right. Well, all right, 2004. All right, well, 2011. Well, okay, maybe 2008. Every 7 years, they were doing they would recast this, and they'd say, well, we're going to be ice-free by this time. It's horseshit. This is the same guy who created the World One computer at MIT. And the World One computer was a simulation that they ran, they rigged the outcome, and they said, guess what? Collapse of society in 2040. that's what the computer said. I mean, again, you can put in whatever you want. Garbage in, garbage out when it comes to data. So you don't know, you know, the idea is, let's work backwards. We want you to create a computer program that says that the world is going to end. Okay. Well, how am I going to do that? Figure it out. Put the numbers in a certain way, weight it so that this is more important than that. And you figure it out. You're the computer scientist guy, right, Jay? So they created the World One. He created World One Computer, showing a collapse of society in 2040. But in 2020, and they did this, by the way, back in the 70s. This isn't something new. But the first time that there was a crack in his computer program, where he said, before we get to 2040 and there's the collapse of society, we'll have an event in 2020. And he said, after 2020, we'll be in a period called the new normal. What happened in 2020? Oh yeah. And then where did we get the word? New normal. And who's responsible for that? Barbara Marx Hubbard. And who is she working with? The Club of Rome. Is it all making sense now? Is it starting to connect? So MIT Limits to Growth guy, co-author, a guy named Jorgen Randers, he wrote a book called Reinventing Prosperity, Managing Economic Growth to Reduce Unemployment, Inequality, and Climate Change. I mean, it's a smorgasbord of horseshit in that book title. Reinventing Prosperity. First of all, they don't want you to be prosperous at all. When they say reinventing prosperity, they mean, how do we make everybody poor? Managing economic growth. How do we make sure that those people, the useless eaters, never excel? And then they talk about, and to reduce unemployment. To reduce unemployment. Well, we could reduce unemployment by creating more jobs, or, you know, we could produce more hats, or we could cut off heads. So instead of producing more hats, they would prefer that they cut off heads. And so when you start hearing about reducing unemployment, they mean reducing unemployment because there are no longer people around. They don't mean, I'm going to go out and create a new industry that's going to give everybody new amazing jobs. And they talk about inequality. Inequality, their entire worldview is based on inequality. If it wasn't for inequality, they wouldn't have anything. They see themselves as most definitely unequal to everybody else. And then they end up, the last part of the book title, and climate change. Climate change. I mean, you are a writer, you are working for the Club of Rome. So I know what climate change means, and Jorgen Randers, the author of this book, he certainly knows what climate change means because he works for the group that invented the concept of it, right? So and in this book, he says, he proposes that we pay bonuses to families that have two or fewer kids, obviously because the rate in which you just tread water in terms of reproduction is 2.1 kids, you know, per person. So you've got to keep it below that. So he was talking about paying bonuses for families. So anyway, the thesis that he put forth in this book that was that he wrote while working for the Club of Rome, and also the Limits to Growth, which came out, the book that came out from the Club of Rome. Basically, what they're doing, their thesis became calls to destroy the middle class by crushing industry. That's what one of the things that they wanted to do in this book. They talk openly in both books. They talk about crushing that. Well, let me ask you this. In the years since these books have come out, have we destroyed the middle class? Yeah, we have. And was it because of an asteroid that came out of nowhere? No. It was government policies. It was done by design through NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization back in 2000 that added China to it, and free trade agreements and all this stuff. So you can kill the middle class, which is essential for having this dystopian society. You don't necessarily want to get rid of all the pores. That's the thing. That's the thing about this. What you want to get rid of is you want to get rid of, if you're them, you want to get rid of the middle class. The middle class is who challenges you, not the poor. The poor people are, I mean, they're never going to be a threat. They may be annoying. They may be taking up space. They may be see them as part of this alien ant farm that they've created, and they would rather the ants be squashed. But they want the middle class out of here, right? Because that's the threat to them. The potential that somebody could come up with a better idea or reimagine society in a way that throws them out of their game. That's always been the purpose behind depopulation. Henry Kissinger talked openly about this, is that their reasoning for targeting the third world. I mean, of course they want fewer people on the planet, but their reasoning from a practical standpoint was that we have current relationships with these governments right now. And we know what we're going to get. We know what, you know, we can work with Bangladesh at 135 million people. We can't work with Bangladesh at 235 million people, potentially, right? Because then that creates unforeseen problems. So they want to trim the fat, cull the herd, keep everything, you know, manage the flock, however you want to describe it. They want that because they need certainty. They need to know that the wheels aren't going to fall off of this government and create problems for our corporations who have moved into Bangladesh and are using all their slave labor to make dress shirts and whatever. So we need to continue to have stability there. And the way we get stability is knowing that the government isn't going to have a crisis due to too many people. You know, if you get too many people and people aren't eating, then they create problems, then they overthrow the government. Next thing you know, there's a new government in there, and maybe the new government says, get the fuck out. We don't want the American Empire in Bangladesh anymore. We want you guys out. So you can't have that. So the best thing to do from their standpoint, when you're crazy, is to make sure that you always keep a handle on the growth of their populations. So let's move on to the World Wildlife Fund. This is the WWF. It's the panda logo, which is fucking, you know, a dark logo when you understand what panda eyes are. Started by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, Prince Philip of the UK, and Sir Julian Huxley, the head of the British Eugenics Society. And, you know, they're just out there saving pandas. From the, you know, they're just out there. They're environmentalists. They're humanitarians. They give each other awards. They do all of this. It's all an environmental cover story. It's all bullshit, of course. Prince Philip said, when I die, I would like to reincarnate as a deadly virus so that I can wipe out the human population. So what are we talking about here? Talk about a mask off moment. Holy shit. Like, he went full lizard person and just came right out and said it. But that's how they think. It's important to know that, because when they come out with the environment, oh, we're just wildlife, we're just saving wildlife. No, you're not. No, you're not. I want to read this quote. This is a quote from John Klycek from Unlimited Hangout. He wrote a great article on this, on Barbara Marx Hubbard and all these people. You can go get it at Unlimited Hangout. But this quote really jumped out to me. And you got to kind of know Malthus and Darwin. I mean, these are sort of names that get thrown around a little bit. But listen to what he said. Malthusianism is the bedrock of Darwinism, which is the foundation of eugenics, which is the cornerstone of transhumanism. Put another way, transhumanism encompasses both the Malthusian, sustainable control of the population quantity, and the Darwinian, eugenic control of the population quality by means of technocracy. It's a big statement. And he's right. And the World Wildlife Fund was pushing concepts like reducing consumerism reducing consumption. And they said that the reason why you would want this is for, quote, a fairly shared burden of change. They want to be fair. It's going to be a massive change, but we want this burden to be shared fairly across all people. Right? Because if there's one thing we know about Prince Philip, Julian Huxley, and Prince Bernhard, is that they're fair. When Prince Bernhard isn't out having hunting parties of human beings on his estate somewhere and bringing in a bunch of his banker buddies to go hunt children, you know, Hunger Games isn't some fictional account, right? They're telling you what they're doing through the movies. And of course, the people behind that are some of the worst people around. Speaking of that, let's talk about Bill and Melinda Gates, because the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the NGO that Henry Kissinger was dreaming about back in 1974 when he wrote National Security Council Memorandum 200, where he outlined that America's foreign policy towards the third world would be, quote, that of depopulation, and that he then later spelled out exactly how it would be done. And he said that it would be done using non-governmental organizations, just like, in his case, the World Health Organization. Soon, you know, for whatever, 25 years later, it would be the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And so, you know, for those that we've done a lot of work on Bill Gates. It's no secret, you know, who he is and what he's all about. But, you know, he has Planned Parenthood connections. His dad was the chairman of the board of Planned Parenthood for a while. Planned Parenthood was a rebranding of the American Eugenics Society. So it's depopulation. It's not, you know, they mask it under, well, we're protecting women's reproductive rights. We're giving them access to health care and everything. Yeah, right. 80% of your locations are in the hood. So is there a certain type of people that you're trying to help? Are you trying to, quote, help the black community with their reproductive rights? Or are you trying to stifle them? Are you trying to murder them? Because the greatest killer of black people are abortions. And that ain't no accident, right? And when you dig into the, the background of Planned Parenthood, it's we've done episodes on it, you know, Margaret Sanger and the like. You know, this is the retail face of eugenics. It's the brand name of depopulation. It's Planned Parenthood. And you can go get yourself a morning after pill or an abortion or whatever you need there. And they do. And it is, it's dangerous. And Bill Gates' family has been involved in that. His father was involved in it for a long time. Bill Gates has given tons of money to Planned Parenthood over the years. What the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation started was something called Gavi, Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization. You've heard of Gavi. Trump plans to stop funding Gavi, which would be nice. Currently, the United States accounts for 13% of their budget. And by removing the United States from donating to Gavi, it removed a pledge of $2.6 billion. So, you know, credit where credit is due to Trump on that one. I think he's got his flaws, don't get me wrong, and plenty of them. But I think he's no fan of Bill Gates. Gates has committed $6.1 billion to Gavi. And in exchange, what he got in India was 496,000 cases of polio after giving children his polio vaccine. you know, to prevent them from getting polio, except that, whoopsie, they got polio instead. He also killed tens of thousands of children in the process too, and then paid the families the bare minimum by law in India that you have to pay per dead kid, and that is $1,000. So in India, a child's life is worth $1,000. It's not my opinion. That's the law. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Gavi were thrown out of India for destroying an entire generation of children with their vaccines. What the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation focus on, really three things. Well, in foreign countries, they're deeply involved in AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis. Now, the cures for all of those happen to always coincidentally be vaccines that they control. And that's why when he's talking about, like, if we do a really good job with our vaccination program, we can lower that number by about 10 or 15%. This is what he's talking about. He's on record in a TED talk advocating for reducing the population, and the formula that he shows that it's vaccines as the method for doing it. He'll tell you, no. What that means is that we just lower the birth rate and therefore, you know, they're not having kids. It's like, no, you're sterilizing them. This is why the World Health Organization got busted for putting antigens in the tetanus vaccine, which are sterilants. They sterilized an entire generation of women. They got busted in Kenya, denied it at first, later admitted they'd been doing it for a decade, and admitted that they had been doing it in a variety of other countries besides Kenya. So this is what's going on. They're sterilizing the population. It's a multi-pronged approach. First of all, we would love to kill all the people on the planet, right? But in the absence of that, let's make sure that fewer of them are born in the first place. Let's do that. Kissinger was on board with that 50 years ago. So they started that process of reproductive rights and all that good stuff. That's a sales pitch for sterilizing the pores. And so they've been working on that for a long, long time. They're more than happy to murder people in wars and through their vaccines that they get. But in addition to that, let's also make sure that the rabbits aren't breeding too much. So and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has spent $60 billion on depopulation through birth control. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of people that aren't being born all around the world because Bill Gates thinks that, you know what this world needs? Less people. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation leadership councils include such esteemed scholars as Anthony Fauci and Margaret Chan, director of the World Health Organization. By the way, the second largest portion of the World Health Organization's budget comes from behind the USA. USA is number one. But the second largest portion isn't actually a country at all. It's Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation at 9.8% of the yearly budget. Let's round up. Let's say 10%. The World Health Organization, we know, and we've watched their behavior over the last couple of years. They get 10% of their money from Bill Gates. They get more than 10% of their money from America, from the American Empire. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the top donor to the Centers for Disease Control as well. We saw how Rochelle Walensky drove that organization, you know, destroyed what was left of their tattered reputation during COVID years. You should not be taking any advice from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, especially when it comes to vaccine advice from them. They're the ones that set the vaccine schedule. Coincidentally, they also happen to own the patents on about 50 different vaccines. Do you not see the conflict of interest there? That the organization, the government organization that is supposed to regulate the industry, has a financial stake by owning patents in the things that they then set the schedule for. We'll get to that in just one second, but let me just finish this up by saying that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, or Gavi, I should say, was removed from India in 2017 for their behavior. And but what they did, what Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation did instead, is they went in and they bought India's National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization. So they went in and bought a component of the Indian government. These people, they never stop. Let's wrap up with this because it's extremely important that we get some numbers out here and some stats with regard to vaccines over the years and autism. Because if you're still out there saying, oh, vaccines don't cause autism, well, look, they don't cause autism every single time in every single kid, but they most definitely cause autism. The only people that are saying that they don't are people that have a financial stake in that or who are ignorant to the facts. But when you dig into the studies, I have read those boring ass studies. It's undeniable. It's in their information. But even if you don't know anything about that, all right, let me just talk a little bit about what the vaccine schedule has looked like over the years. And compare that with what the rate of autism has been over the years. Okay. And full disclosure here, there's a variety of factors that contribute to autism. It's not always vaccines, okay? But we understand, you have the stories of the mothers who took their kids in for the 18-month or 24-month wellness checks, got them around to vaccines, and their kid never spoke from that point forward. They changed. The light went off. The behavior changed. Whoa, I wonder what it could be. Can't be vaccine, so I wonder what else it could be. Is it a planetary alignment that did it? Is it, you know, did your kid stick a crayon up their nose and break it? I mean, I don't know, it's got to be something else. Can't be. No. Do not try to gaslight those moms and tell them that they don't know what they're talking about. They know their kids. I'll be damned if somebody's going to go out there and tell them that it's all in their heads. It is not in their heads. In 1962, the vaccine schedule was 5 doses. That's it. 1983, 21 years later, it went from 5 doses to 24. Big jump. 3 years after that, 1986, the Vaccine Protection Act was passed, giving blanket immunity to the vaccine manufacturing industry because they were getting the shit sued out of them. They couldn't function any longer if they didn't get the protection. Now, instead of investing money into making sure that their vaccines were, you know, safe and effective, they instead took that money and bought themselves all the politicians they could buy and got the Vaccine Protection Act passed so that they are immune. Not immune in the way that they say your kids will be immune, but I mean immune from lawsuits. You have to go through the VAERS court, Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System. You have to go through all that stuff. It's a headache. So again, 62, 5 doses. 83, 24 doses. We get the Vaccine Protection Act. What is it in 2018? It's gone from 24 doses to 72 doses. It was just 5. You got the magic lawsuit shield that you can hold up. And now it's gone from 5 to 72. Imagine my surprise. Well, I'm sure autism is not a thing then. There's no way it could be correlated in any way, shape, or form. Could it? Could it? Well, autism rates in 1970, 1 in 10,000. About 25 years later, 1995, I was just getting out of college. It went from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 1,000. Uh-oh, that's a problem. Still relatively rare, but that's a problem. In 5 years, from 1995 to 2000, just 5 years, it went from 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 500. We've got a problem. 10 years later, 2010, 1 in 68. 13 years later, 2023, 1 in 36 kids. This is a crime against humanity. This is the pharmaceutical industry doing this. This is depopulation. This is thinning the herd. This has a knockdown effect. It doesn't just impact the kid that gets autism. It impacts their entire family, the parents, their siblings, the resources that they spend, the time management, all of it. Boys are 4 times more likely to get autism. I don't know why that is, but that's what it is. In the world today, there are 75 million people with autism. That is the same as the population of Thailand. Let's end with this quote. This quote is from Verno Vinge, mathematician and computer scientist. He said, "Within 30 years, we will have the technological means to create superhuman intelligence. Shortly after, the human era will be ended." The worst part about this quote is that he said it way back in 1993, 32 years ago. Unfortunately, the future is now. If you like this episode, you think it might be important to share it with somebody in your family or friend group, take the steps right now and do that. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the way to do that. Go to naturalblaze.com, go to activistpost.com, bookmark those. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Come try new Skyline Dip Cholitos at your neighborhood Skyline today. A warm, soft tortilla filled with their amazing chili and cheese with an extra layer of cream cheese and crunchy Fritos corn chips at participating Skyline restaurants for a limited time.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. SI.org.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.